32. Yes, people in Germany had vague hopes that something positive would come from the emigrants. There was not much basis for these hopes, but since the situation was hopeless at home, and since it is difficult to live without some hope, they placed their hopes abroad. One hope, which a few months before would have been a fear, and which many still were not sure whether they should call hope or fear, was directed toward foreign countries. In Germany that meant France and England. Could France and England idly contemplate what was happening in Germany for long? Would not the humanitarian left in both countries be appalled by the barbaric tyranny that was taking place on their doorsteps? And would not the nationalist right be alarmed by the preparations for war that were not even kept hidden, and the open rearmament that had been pursued almost from the very first day of the new regime? Whatever the shade of their governments, surely these two countries would soon lose patience with the Nazis, and use their still infinitely superior military might to stop the mischief in a week. If the politicians there were not totally blind, no other course of action was conceivable. One could not expect them to sit idly by while the knives were being sharpened for use against their countries. They would hardly be fooled by a few peace speeches when every school child in Germany could see straight through them. In the meantime, the political emigrants in France and England would certainly be favoured and cultivated by sensible statesmen. They would form the backbone of the organization of the future German Republic, which would have learned from the mistakes of its predecessor and be truly effective. Perhaps everything would seem to have been a bad dream, as after a cleansing thunderstorm or the quick, decisive lancing of a boil. We would begin again at the point where a false start had been made in 1919, a bit more wisely and with fewer prejudices. Those were the hopes. Admittedly, they had little foundation, except that their realization would have been sensible and desirable. These hopes, coupled with my overwhelming feeling that everything in life had become unpredictable anyway, and that I could only act on the spur of the moment, replaced any properly thought-out plans for emigration that I might have made. I would just leave, or so I thought. Where to? Paris, of course. For as long as I was permitted, I would arrange to have 200 marks a month sent to me, and then I would take stock. There would doubtless be something for me to do. There was, after all, no lack of things that needed to be done. The naivety of this plan was in part an expression of my situation at the time, that of a young person who has never lived away from home, and feels the time approaching when he must fly the nest. That in this case flying the nest meant going into exile, that it was a step into the unknown, an adventure, did not bother me very much. The strange counterpoint of a certain numb desperation, it can't get much worse, and a youthful spirit of adventure made the decision easier for me. One should also not forget that, like all Germans of my generation, the feeling that everything was so uncertain was deeply embedded in my mind. It is a commonly held belief that caution is just as dangerous as recklessness, and that caution deprives one of the pleasure of taking risks. Incidentally, everything I have experienced in my life reinforces the truth of this perception. Thus, one day, when my training period at the Kammergericht had ended, I declared to my father that I wanted to leave. I could not see anything worthwhile for me here. In particular, it was impossible and senseless to try to become a judge or administrative civil servant in the current circumstances. I wanted to get out, go to Paris for the time being. Would he give me his blessing and send me 200 marks a month, as long as that was possible? It was almost surprising how weak my father's opposition was. In March he had brushed aside emotional outbursts like this with a quiet smile of superiority. In the meantime he had grown very old. He no longer slept at night. The drumming and alarms at the nearby SS barracks kept him awake, but more so, perhaps, his thoughts. It is harder for an old man to bear the destruction and disappearance of everything he has worked for than it is for a young one. For me, leave-taking, even in its most radical form, meant a new beginning. For him, it was final. His dominant feeling was that he had lived in vain. There had been great pieces of legislation in his administrative area on which he had worked closely. They were important, daring, thoughtful, intellectual achievements, the fruits of decades of experience and years of intense, meticulous analysis and dedicated refinement. With a stroke of the pen, they had been declared null and void. It had not even been a major event. Not only that, but the foundations on which such things could be built or replaced had been washed away. The whole tradition of a state based on the rule of law, to which generations of men like my father had devoted their lives and energies, which had seemed so firm and permanent, had disappeared overnight. It was not just failure that my father experienced at the end of a life that had been severe, disciplined, industrious, and, all in all, very successful. It was catastrophe. He was witnessing the triumph, not of his opponents, that he would have borne with wise acceptance, but of barbarians, beneath consideration as opponents. In those days, I sometimes saw my father sitting at his desk for long periods, just staring into space, without a glance at the papers before him. It seemed as though he was surveying a vast, baleful scene of destruction. "And what do you intend to do abroad?" he said, his old scepticism still showing in the question, and his canny lawyer's instinct for the decisive point. But the voice was so tired that its tone suggested the question had only been asked as a formality, and that he would accept almost any answer. I put the best gloss I could on my lack of plans. "Well," he said with a small, sad, kindly smile, "that doesn't sound very promising, does it?" "True," I said, "but what can I look forward to here?" "I'm just afraid," he said, beginning to warm to his argument and take a firmer stand than he had perhaps intended, "that you are deluding yourself. They're not just waiting for us over there, you know. Immigrants are a burden for any country, and it's not pleasant to feel you are a burden. There's a great difference between entering a country as a kind of ambassador, with a purpose and something to show, and coming as a refugee looking for shelter. A great difference." "Don't we have something to offer?" I said. "If the entire German intelligentsia, all the artists and scientists, were to emigrate, which country would not feel privileged to be given all that as a present?" He raised his arm a little and let it sink tiredly. "Bankrupt stock," he said. "You lose your value if you become a refugee. Just look at the Russians. The Russian refugees were also an élite. Now their generals, politicians, and writers are glad if they're allowed to be waiters or taxi drivers in Paris." "Perhaps they prefer being waiters in Paris to being ministers in Moscow," I said. "Perhaps," said my father. "Perhaps not. Such things are easy to say beforehand. Afterward, when you're faced with reality, things look different. Salvation and destitution are easy to contemplate when you have enough to eat." "Should I perhaps become a Nazi for fear of starvation and destitution?" I said. "No," he said, "you shouldn't. Certainly not." "And do you think I can become a judge without becoming a Nazi?" "I don't suppose you could be a judge," said my father. "At least for the time being. Who can tell what lies in the future? But I thought you could at least become a lawyer. And anyway, aren't you beginning to get some money for the stuff you write?" That was true. A well-respected newspaper, in which I had occasionally published short pieces, had written to me suggesting a closer collaboration. At that time, the great newspapers that had formerly been democratic offered surprising opportunities for young, Aryan, non-Nazi people who were not handicapped by a leftist record, or better still, were unknown quantities. I had not rejected the offer. I had gone to the offices, and to my delight had found an editorial staff that was not in the least Nazi, that thought and felt as I did. It was pure joy to sit in the offices, exchange pieces of news and slander. It was pleasant to dictate articles and watch them being passed to the messengers to be taken to the typesetters. It sometimes felt like being in a nest of conspirators. The only thing that made me uneasy was that, in spite of all the illusions concealed between the lines of the articles we had written, which had produced such laughter in the office, the next morning, when the paper appeared, it seemed to be a committed Nazi organ. "I think I may actually be able to write for the paper from abroad," I said. "That makes sense," said my father. "Have you spoken to the editors yet?" I had to admit that I had not. "I suggest," said my father, "that we let the matter rest for a few days and think about it a bit more carefully. You must not think that it would be easy for your mother and me to let you go, and into such uncertainty at that. In any case, I expect you to take your exams first, if only from a sense of propriety." That he continued to insist on. After a few days he put forward a plan of his own. First, you will take your assessor examination as intended. You cannot simply throw 20 years of education overboard and run away just before your finals. That will take about another 5 months. Then you have 6 months in hand to write your doctoral thesis. After all, you can write that as easily in Paris as here. So if you still feel the same way then, you can take 6 months' leave and go where you like, let's say to Paris, and work on your thesis. You can look around while you're doing that. If you think that you can gain a foothold, well and good. If not, you haven't lost anything, and you can still come back. That will be about a year from now, and who knows what things will be like in a year's time.